Welcome back to the clubhouse here in the McAdoo studios. Kyle Bailey riding solo here in the second hour, kind of. Our boy Danny Noakes has taken off. He's got the call tonight of Virginia Tech men's soccer hosting number 21 UVA over at Thompson Field. If you're into soccer, if you want to see Danny call the game televised, check him out on ESPN3. Well, telecast, internet telecast. You can watch him on ESPN3. He's got the call tonight of Virginia Tech and number 21 Virginia. Again, men's soccer over on Thompson Field. But each Friday in the second hour, we'll join by Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. So I'm not fully riding solo. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. We've got a lot of things to get to. Some tech news. Tech playing Duke tomorrow, 23rd ranked team in the country. We chatted with David Cutcliffe yesterday. He's an interesting guy, an interesting matchup for a lot of reasons, which we'll discuss coming up. But first and foremost, are you a soccer fan at all?
I'll watch the World Cup.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm trying, man.
I'm
trying.
When I was growing up, it was never played in any school I attended, and I don't like things that could end in a tie.
Yeah.
I mean, this is America. Somebody has to win, right?
You would think. I mean, I guess I get it. Football, you can end in a tie in football.
In the NFL, you can.
That's what I'm saying. In the NFL, yeah. You can end in a tie.
Which I don't think should happen either.
No, never. I don't like that either. Look, I'm not denigrating soccer here. I went to a World Cup. It was an incredible, once-in-a-lifetime, eye-opening experience. You know, it's like every major college football rivalry packed into one. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have an entire country hating an entire country. You know, it's pretty interesting stuff. I watched the World Cup. I watched the Olympics. I watched some of the higher-level, Champions League stuff, you know, when I know some of the players that are involved. But you got a hard time pulling me into some of the MLS
stuff. Well, I only have so much space in my brain to fit sports, so I focus on the main ones. Soccer hasn't made it in there.
No, yet. It has not. I agree with you. All right, let's take a look back to last Saturday. Virginia Tech went to Miami, lost 30-20, and we've had a different conversation each week, and that's not altogether uncommon when you're talking about a college football team. It's a different conversation as to why a team loses or wins each week. Typically, when you win, it's not nearly as nuanced or complex. You win the game, you win the game. But we've had different conversations about why Virginia Tech has lost a football game, it seems, week by week throughout the season. They're now 3-4 overall, 1-2 in conference, but last week it was simply you can't lose the turnover battle 4-0 and expect to win a game. And even though they had a chance late in the game, down by 3, you lose the turnover battle 4-0 and you gift the other team 14 points, typically you lose the game.
I mean, especially going against a quarterback like Brad Kaya, which, let's face it, that guy's an NFL quarterback.
I think he's a first-rounder.
Yeah, I think it's a good possibility that he is. He's the best they've had since Ken Dorsey. I don't think there's any question about that. He doesn't turn the football over. So you're already at a disadvantage. It's just because they have Brad Kaya and you don't.
Right.
And you're playing on the road. You're not a team that has a lot of room for error to begin with, and then you turn the ball over 4 times. There are other things you can point to. I think they got away from Trayvon McMillan a little bit later in the game. And looking back, he probably needs 20 carries instead of 16.
That's that point, though. We talked to Andy about that on Wednesday. He did have 19 touches overall, right?
True,
including
true.
Some of the passing
catches, games. Yeah.
And you saw an increased workload still. Mm-hmm. And you do – every week there's something that you can nitpick.
Sure.
Every week there's something you can complain about. He should have gotten more touches, or Bucky should have been targeted more, or whatever the case may be. Ryan Mallick didn't get enough looks. There are only so many balls, so many touches to go around. And so sometimes fans can be a bit unreasonable in that respect. But to your point, an increased workload for Trayvon McMillan, and it seemed to pay off.
It's the best thing for this offense is for him to touch the ball. What doesn't make a lot of sense is Brennan Motley being the backup quarterback. It's like they're relying on him more than Trayvon McMillan, who's the best guy on the team with the ball in his hands, I think. And I think that's a little unfair to Motley, puts a little too much on his shoulders. We'll see what happens this weekend with a different quarterback. They're going to have to change game plans as far as how they do the running game. What was good to see is they were successful in some traditional runs last week. It wasn't a bunch of read option and everything like that. There were some traditional runs in there, and I had my concerns about what the running game would look like once Michael Brewer returned. But now that Trayvon McMillan's the ball carrier and they had some success out of some traditional running formations last week, then I'm a little less concerned than I was before.
I don't like to be critical of play calling. I know that's a pastime for fans and media alike, in most cases. I'm not a big fan of criticizing play calling unless it's absolutely warranted. And what you just said there makes a lot of sense to me personally, because I think with a back like him, who is very good in space, obviously, very good on the edges, and has proven, at least through a game or two, that he's not bad between the tackles. We need more of a sample size to actually know that, but he's pretty good between the tackles as well. There have been a couple of more traditional running plays, some toss sweeps, you know, some off-tackles type stuff, you know, lead plays that I think work well for a guy like that, and I personally would like to see more of it. And I know if things aren't working, you adjust, but I like the fact that they're getting more toward that, and with Brewer, you think you'll see more of that coming up on Saturday. At least I anticipate that we will. And the bottom line for me is, Chris, that these aren't the same teams that Virginia Tech fielded from, say, 1995 to 2011, but they won championships running the football like that. And I think that they need to get back to it more consistently.
Yeah, I think so too, especially when, you know, you have limited depth at wide receiver. And let's face it, you know, even if we didn't know which quarterback was going to start this week, it would either be their number two quarterback or a guy coming off a broken collarbone. So, you know, you don't have a great 100% terrific option there either way. So you've got to lean on your running game if you can. And I think this offensive line is a better run blocking group than they are pass blocking group. That's my opinion after seven games. And now they finally figured out the right guy to carry the football. It's going to be Michael Brewer tomorrow. I would love to see a lot of pistol formation, traditional runs, things like that. I was glad they finally put in the speed option against Miami. I actually wrote after the Pitt game, somebody asked, what do you think are some things they could do differently? What could they add to the playbook that they haven't already? And I said, well, one thing that might help to get these defenders out of the box is some speed option. I mean, you got a fast guy like McMillan and a guy like Molly who can run. And they ran that play twice last week, right, for big gains. One for a touchdown, which is technically a pass.
Right.
And the other for about a 29, 30-yard run down the right sideline. So, unfortunately, though, you got to take that – probably got to take that – out of the playbook with a, you know, Michael Brewer in there with a banged up shoulder and everything. So it's what's going to interest me is what the offense looks like with a different quarterback in there and a quarterback that has different strengths than Brendan Motley. Those, you know, you couldn't have two quarterbacks that are more polar opposite of each other. What you can do with those quarterbacks, you know, you can't do the same thing with Brendan Motley that you can with Michael Brewer and vice versa. You just can't. So that's going to be, and I still to this day, I don't know what our offense was going to look like this year under Michael Brewer, because you can't call the same plays. You can't have the same game plan for both those guys. But I guess we'll find out tomorrow.
We will. And what I will also be very curious to see is how much they'll play both quarterbacks.
Right.
Because you heard it after the Miami game on Saturday that both Frank Beamer and Scott Leffler were insistent they made the right move to start Brendan Motley, and they were criticized or questioned, of course, for bringing Michael Brewer in much later into the game after three turnovers from Motley, a fumble and two interceptions. And that's natural. That comes with part of the job. You're going to be questioned and criticized for things like that. Who knows if Brewer would have led that team to a comeback win? Who knows what might have happened otherwise? We'll never actually know. But as it pertains to playing two quarterbacks, we've seen them try it before, but when they tried it last season, they didn't trust Brendan Motley to throw the football.
That's right.
Now they know they can trust him to throw the football, and it opens things up. But how they do this, does he get an entire series? Are we going to see he gets first and second down, and if they don't pick up the first down, they bring Michael Brewer in on third down and 11? You know, it just we've seen that kind of stuff before, so I'm going to be curious to see if Motley gets a series of plays, you know, just first and second down, or how this is actually going to work, because I've never been a big fan of the two-quarterback system. But if you do it well, if you do it right, which can be tough to do, it can be successful.
Yeah, you know, and ironically, I think Steiny's taken probably more heat at Virginia Tech than any coach in our history. But I thought back in 2007 when Tyrod Taylor was a freshman and Sean Glennon was a senior, I thought he managed that situation pretty brilliantly down the stretch as far as using both those guys. I remember going to the UVA game that year and Virginia Tech you know, went up there and beat UVA for the Coastal Division Championship. And Tyrod Taylor and Sean Glennon both played big roles in that football game, in that win. Sean Glennon, I think, passed for three touchdowns and almost 300 yards. And Tyrod Taylor completed a couple passes, had a nice day on the ground, scored a rushing touchdown. So I think Steiny managed that one pretty well this year. But yeah, like you said, how many plays does Brendan Motley get? Do you let him throw the ball? I almost think that the first play they put him in the game should be some sort of a simple pass play just to show Duke that, okay, when he's in the game, there is a threat that he's going to pass the football.
Well, this is a guy who entered last week second in the ACC in touchdown
with
passes.
11 touchdown passes.
You know, so
yeah.
It's well established that he can and will throw the football, and didn't have his greatest game last Saturday. I think last week we talked about this with Andy and earlier throughout the week was that it was the first game where you pointed to Brendan Motley and said his inability to get the job done is what ultimately cost them the win, or at least close to it. You never put the loss on one guy.
Sure.
It's a team sport. You just can't do that. But his inability to take care of the football, which has sort of been his hallmark, you know, since he's been at Virginia Tech. He hasn't gotten a lot of playing time, but you think back to his first real coming out party in the spring when he was competing with Mark Leal. One of the things that stood out up until that spring game, and it was a Hail Mary pass, he didn't turn the ball over one time in any of those scrimmages. So it was a kid who had, up until that point, had taken care of the football pretty well. He just didn't do that. It looked like he was pressing to me at times throughout that game, just really trying to make a play. I think he saw a wide-open receiver on that first fumble where he tried to rush the ball out of his hands, and it was a fluke thing. And then two interceptions, he was just pressing, trying to make a play.
I don't blame him for that first turnover at all. That can happen to anybody. I've seen the ball fly out of Aaron Rodgers' hand before, and that's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it can happen to anybody who's ever played the quarterback position. It'll probably happen to everybody at least once in their quarterback career, whether it's high school, college, NFL, well, whatever.
Cost ECU and that Blake Kemp throw in the, when ECU was driving to try to beat the Gators earlier in the season.
Sure. You know what I mean? I mean, so that stuff like that can happen to anybody. Motley didn't have, I'll say this for this game and the Pitt game, which was his other, which was a three interception game. He has not had the benefit of playing with the lead. We didn't have the lead once at all against Miami. We came back and tied it right before halftime, and then sure enough, the defense jumps off sides and they get a free play and then go down and score a touchdown. So in the two games where Brendan Motley has had to, has had a bunch of turnovers, they've been playing from behind. And when you play from behind, you know, maybe you're forcing stuff. You can't lean on the running game quite as much. It would really benefit him to be able to work with the lead. I mean, what if he had been up 20-13 at halftime instead of down 20-13? And then you can work that running game some more, and maybe you end up throwing, you know, 6-10 fewer passes in the second half.
Right.
So, like you said, I mean, it was a rough game for him, but at the same time, I don't think it was his fault that we were down 20-13 at halftime. I know the first play from scrimmage, you know, he lost control of the football, but that can happen. I didn't think he played a poor first half. I thought his second half was rough, but then again, you're down. You're trying to come back, and you know, just like Michael Brewer's interception that he threw. I mean, at that point, you're down by 10 points, and with 2 minutes left in the game, you've got to try something.
Oh, yeah.
You can't be conservative at that point. So, either way you slice it, there are deeper issues with this team than the quarterback, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Still plenty more to get to with Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. We'll talk about Dwayne Lawson, the much ballyhooed freshman who's seen limited action this year, but his red shirt's been burned. We'll talk about the defense, and we'll look ahead to tomorrow's matchup between Duke and Virginia Tech. It happened this way last season, that Duke entered this game as the ranked team. Virginia Tech was the unranked team, but the Hokies beat them on the road in Wallace-Wade. Could they do it again tomorrow and get back to .500 in the conference? Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.